Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Yep, it's Friday night, the 26th of April. We're all in our places with bright, shiny faces and matching socks.
Well, I'm not very happy right now because I am sick to death of Windows 11.
Well, you and everybody else get in line.
Yeah, I know.
Jeez Louise. You know, I was talking to a local computer guy. This was a few months ago, and it was when I got my new computer. So I went automatically from Windows 10 to Windows 11. And he says, oh, yeah, you're not going to like Windows 11. And I said, well, that's what I understand. I said, my online partner, she hates it. And I'm pretty sure I'll probably hate it, too. And he said, yeah, he said, you know what? He said, every other version of Windows sucks.
The best one, as far as I'm concerned, was Windows 7. Remember that one?
Yeah. We didn't have anywhere near the problems with Windows 7 that we do with 11.
Yeah. And it's almost like every day they're giving you an update to fix what they screwed up the day before.
Well, they justify their own existence that way.
That's true.
You know, they create their own problems, and then we're supposed to be grateful that they solve them. They're kind of like liberals in that way.
Ah, oh, good point.
You know, I mean, and if you don't believe it or if you don't know what I'm talking about, read Rules for Radicals. Yeah, it explains it really well.
Right.
You know, we've got some really interesting things to talk about tonight. Let's jump right in. The immunity case that's been going on over at the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C., is in the news. Obviously, President Trump was not allowed to be there when they heard oral arguments the other day because he has to stay in his chair.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Supreme Court takes precedence over, you know, the New York lynch mob.
You think?
But, yeah, I think. But, you know, the judge there, you're not here. You're being, you know, found in contempt. He really has no choice.
You know, it's an interesting situation, that whole contempt thing. Because the judge in the New York case keeps threatening him with contempt because he keeps violating the gag order. In fact, Trump walked out of court today and immediately fired off a truth on Truth Social about the judge.
Not only that, he was speaking right after about what was going on in, you know, press conference. I mean,
going to have a hearing on that next Thursday, as I understand it.
Yeah. What bothers me about that, whether the gag order is wrong or right, we all know it's wrong, but it's in place. And what he's doing is pushing the envelope. Can't he even keep his mouth shut one day?
No, he. There's a method to this madness. He's challenging this judge in that court to either lock him up or issue a fine, because every time he gets fined for something or every time the judge yells at him, his poll numbers go up. It's a calculated risk.
Well, I think there comes a time, as much as you might not like a particular judge and, you know, what they said. You don't have to respect the judge, but you need to respect the process. You're an ex-president. You really need to respect the process.
Yeah, and I can understand
he's not
that.
Doing that.
Yeah, I can understand that. But, you know, this, you know, 99.999% of the time, I 100% agree with you. This is the exception to the rule, because in this case, the process stinks.
I didn't say it didn't stink, but that is still the legal process. And as a president, you should set an example. You're going to respect the process, but not respect the person. I agree 100% everything he's saying. But you're still out there. You have a gag order. You're slamming the process. You're slamming the judge. And yeah, your poll numbers get a little bit of a bump in the beginning. But that doesn't mean those bumps are going to hold.
You know, we'll see. But, you know, that's not really, excuse me, that's not really the source or the focus of this topic. The focus of this topic is the immunity case in the Supreme Court. Oral arguments were held the other day. It was kind of fascinating to listen to what some of the different justices were asking of the attorneys on both sides. And it was interesting to hear some of the responses from those attorneys.
Yes, it was. Some of them kind of think like I think. I think a president does need a certain amount of immunity, but not a blanket immunity. Because, you know, a president, you can take Richard Nixon as an example in one respect with Watergate. But then you can take things like certain things Obama did, like the 5-for-1 Taliban trade. To me, no immunity for something like that.
Yeah,
you're trading terrorists who went out and deliberately killed Americans, just like you thought they were going to do. But you traded them for a known traitor. So that, to me, should have no immunity, something like that. I think blanket immunity is a dangerous thing for anyone.
I understand what you're saying. And in a way, I agree with it. You know, it's an interesting situation that the Supreme Court finds themselves in. In this whole brouhaha over immunity. I can pretty well guarantee you what's going to happen and what the Supreme Court is going to do with this case. I've got a pretty good idea where this is headed.
So do I. Let's see if they match.
Okay. The Supreme Court is, we're not going to get a decision or a ruling from the Supreme Court until probably June.
Right.
Okay. And I think what they're going to do is they're going to take the whole kit and caboodle and they're going to send it back to the lower court. And what they're going to instruct the lower court to do is separate out what, in these charges, what were official presidential duties and what were not official presidential duties, or maybe another way to put it, presidential duties officially and private decisions that the president made. And what they're going to say, this is my thought, but I think I'm probably right on this. What they're going to say is that when it comes to official duties of a president, any president, doesn't have to be Trump, could be anybody, they have immunity from prosecution outside of impeachment. They're going to say when a president is working officially as the president and, you know, doing presidential duties, the remedy for that, if you think something is wrong, is to impeach the president, impeach him in the House, convict him in the Senate. But outside of that, if you fail to do that or fail to gain a conviction in the Senate over anything that you impeach him for, that's it. You can't bring him up on charges for official duties down the road. I think they're going to separate it out so that it's not a blanket immunity thing. It's going to be divided up, and then somebody's going to have to figure out, well, what's an official presidential duty and what's not.
That's why I don't think they're going to do that. I think it's going to actually, this time, work in Trump's favor. I think they're going to go along party lines. We have the majority, unless Roberts and Barrett go with the Democrats again. If they stay true with the Republicans, I think this will be ruled in Trump's favor.
So you think they're going to rule for blanket immunity?
They might put some, you know, picadillos in there. I'm not saying that they're going to rule in for blanket immunity. I think they're going to take this as a separate case. This deals with Trump, what's happening, you know, all the charges against him. But we will handle each case if it ever came up again. I really don't think they're going to send it back to, I mean, if they send this back to the lower courts, then they, in my opinion, are dereliction of duty. This is a perfect case for the Supreme Court to handle. And if they don't have the guts to handle it, then maybe they shouldn't be on the Supreme Court.
Well, I don't think it's a lack of guts. I mean, if they look at this and they say, okay, official presidential duties are covered by immunity, and non-official or private things a president does cannot be covered by presidential immunity, then they're not chickening out. They're simply saying that the Constitution, and that's what they're there to decide, is the constitutionality of things. They're not like a regular court of law. And they're going to say the Constitution provides a remedy, and that is impeachment in the House and conviction in the Senate. And that's what presidential duties fall under. Anything else is, you know, open to whatever. But here's the thing. If they do what I'm thinking they're going to do, and they send it to the lower court to separate this out, that means that Jack Smith, he's the special prosecutor in this case, that means that he's going to have to take whatever they separate out as non-presidential duties and re-indict Trump on those. Now, if we don't get a decision until June and it goes to the lower court, there is no way this thing is going to wind up back in a courtroom again before the election.
And that's why I think they're not going to do that, because then what they are doing by sending it back to the lower courts, they are not, let me get the right phrase. When you are in a timely manner, okay, this case is not being handled then in a timely manner, because they send it back and they delay it till after the election. That kind of is interference in the election as well. Because that works in one person's favor and not in another. So they've got to grow a set and make a decision one way or the other. And again, I cannot reiterate enough, I support Trump in this. I'm not a personal fan, but I support him in the witch hunt. They can't keep vacillating back and forth. We'll send it here, we'll send it there. This is not a case that ever belonged in the lower courts. I know they had to go up the steps, but once it reaches the Supreme Court, a case of this importance, those nine justices need to grow a set and make a decision?
Well, I'll tell you who needed to grow a set and make a decision well before it got to the Supreme Court was Jack Smith, because he lumped all of these charges together in one giant indictment.
Right, and okay. He did that, you know.
It's a matter of throwing enough stuff at the wall to see what sticks.
Yeah, you know what? Jack Smith is an ass.
Yes, he is.
To put it mildly. No matter what he did, no matter what Trump did or didn't do, or Biden did, or this one did, or that one did, it doesn't matter. This is a case now, an important case, that determines not only what happened with Trump, but for presidents down the road. And what happens with retroactive cases?
Well, you can't go back.
They could suddenly decide to bring up, Obama did this, or George W. Bush did this, or Billy Boy did this. I mean, you can't work that way. You're the Supreme Court. Make a decision.
Okay. Let's say they do what you suggest. Okay. They make a decision. Boom. That's it. No going back to the lower court. No separating it out. What they're left with is a president either gets blanket immunity for anything he does, whether it's private or in official duties, or the president gets absolutely no immunity for anything.
They never, in this indictment, or however you want to phrase it, this is not about blanket immunity. It really isn't. This is a case for Donald Trump presenting that he, while he, you know, was president, certain things happened. He should have the immunities for certain things. Trump never said the word blanket. Neither did his attorneys.
Right.
They are talking about specifics here. They need to judge this case on specifics and rule on the specifics presented to them.
That's not going to happen. I'll tell you why. You know, that means they would have to go through that giant indictment point by point by point and say, well, this is indictable, this isn't, this is, that's not. And that isn't the job of the Supreme Court, because they were presented with one giant indictment that included everything. So either that indictment stands or it doesn't stand.
I really don't see it that way. I think I don't care how long it takes the Supreme Court. This is their job. This is what they were appointed to do. They might not like the tediousness of it, but when they go in, they could say, well, let's all nine of us say the majority will rule as far as indictments. We can throw out those because those are just pure nonsense. But the ones that actually violate the Constitution, that's what we'll base our ruling on. They need to do their jobs.
Well, but they
plain
can't,
and simple. They need to do their jobs.
Their job is not to separate those out.
Yeah, it is.
No.
If they have to do that to reach a verdict, it sure is their jobs to separate it out, because it's the Constitution is very specific. They're supposed to uphold the Constitution. Let's say some of those charges went against the Constitution. They're out. That is their job.
Judges, including the Supreme Court justices, their job is not to litigate or legislate from the bench. Their job, is, in the case of Supreme Court justices, is to look at the constitutionality of a law or an act. It's up to the attorneys or charge. It's up to the attorney or the attorneys that are prosecuting to file the charges properly and constitutionally. And if they're lumping everything together, that's not constitutional. And it's going to have to go back down and be separated out. That's my thought. You see it differently.
And I disagree with it, which is fine because we agree on the basic premise. But their job is to interpret the Constitution. If you're handed a big package of all this nonsense, it's 90 whatever charges. That'll take them an hour to go through. This 2 hours. This is unconstitutional. That's unconstitutional.
All right.
That's we'll see their who's job, right. In my opinion.
We'll see who's right. What I'm saying is that they will send it to the lower court. They will instruct the lower court. These have to be separated out as to official duties and duties of a private citizen. And it's going to have to be, you're going to have to convene another grand jury. You're going to have to indict on what is official duties or indict on what isn't official duties. And official duties are going to be classified as immune from prosecution. That's what I say is going to happen. Now, we'll see come June, because I don't think we're going to get any kind of a reading on this until June. We'll see if they do what I say they're going to do or if they do what you say they're going to do.
You give them to June. Okay, so they have 2 months to go through this thing. That's what they should be doing. What are they going to be for 2 months twiddling their thumbs? How are we going to write this?
Yes, that's what they do.
Let them do the job they were appointed to.
That's
what they do. This is important.
Okay, now I've said what I think they are going to do. You have said what they should do. So I'm asking you, Diane, what are they going to do?
What are they going to do?
Because I said what I think they are going to do.
I think it's going to come down to, at the beginning, it's going to be right down party lines. The Republicans will say this. The ones who lean Republican, the ones who lean Democrat will say, nope. I think then we got to focus on Roberts and Barrett. Who will they stand with? It's either going to be... If
you're
the Republicans stand together, Trump is okay. And the only ones that I think that would side with the Democrats are Roberts and Barrett. In this particular case, I think more Barrett than Roberts. But if any of them switch over, then Trump is screwed.
Okay. I'm trying to get a specific answer from you, and you're doing your best not to give it.
That's not what I think they're going to do. They're either going to go down party line.
But what's going to be the outcome?
Switch over.
Okay, but what's going to be the outcome? I'm saying they are sending it back to the lower court to have it all separated out, and it will require a second indictment. You're saying, well, they're going to vote this way or they're going to vote that way. Okay, what's the outcome, Diane? That's what I'm looking for. Is he going to be granted immunity? Is he not going to be granted immunity? Or is the Supreme Court going to separate these things out and say, well, he's immune here, but not there? What are they going to rule?
I think they're going to set a policy for what is and is not immunity.
Okay, that's what I'm looking for.
I think they're going to... they're going to basically decide what should be allowed as presidential immunity and what should not be. I don't think they're going to go for blanket immunity.
Okay. And what I'm saying is they will say that whatever is done in the official duties of the president is immune.
In the official duties of the president.
Yep.
Yeah, I would go along with that. Okay. As long as it's in the official duties of the president.
And the reason they're going to, my thought, the reason they're going to send it back to the lower court is to have the whole thing refiled as a case based on what is or what isn't official duties. And if they still think they can indict him on the unofficial duties, they're going to have to reconvene a grand jury and go through that whole rigmarole again and re-indict him.
That's election interference.
I don't see it that way, because this isn't the fault of the Supreme Court. This is the fault of that jackass, Jack Smith.
I agree. But why I say it's election interference is because it's very important, especially in this election, that people need to know what is legal, what is not legal. They delay this case by sending it back down, and it will not get heard till after the election. That is election interference, because we are entitled, we the people, are entitled to know, did Trump break the law or did he not? Plain and simple. There are many Republicans, and I'm not talking about the never Trumpers. There are many Republicans, many independents, whose decision on whether to vote for Trump or not are being based on, is he a felon? You don't let the people have that decision before the election. You are, in a way, determining the election, meaning the Supreme Court. And that's not right.
In a way, but I still say this is Jack Smith's fault that this is going to happen. He's the one that brought all these charges and lumped them all together, threw everything at the wall to see what was going to stick. He has a long history of this, and he's been chastised by the court, the high court, in the past over and over again for doing this exact type of thing. It's a stunt by Jack Smith. The Supreme Court has to do what's right by the law. If this delays things, it's Jack Smith's fault. That's my take.
It's Jack Smith's fault for bringing these stupid charges to begin with.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
But it's the Supreme Court's fault if they don't have the guts to rule. Even if they say, Jack Smith, you're an ass, they've got to give some kind of ruling before the election.
The last time we saw the Supremes litigate or legislate from the bench, it was Obamacare, and John Roberts did it on behalf of Obama. I don't want to ever see our Supreme Court litigating or legislating from the bench again, period.
That's not litigating or legislating from the bench. That is making a decision in a timely manner. Everybody's allowed to have due process. You keep delaying this, you're not giving Trump due process. Personally, I think they're going to rule in his favor.
Hey, we'll see.
But to delay it and send it back, and then it's got to go through everything again, you're denying Trump also his due process.
We'll see what happens, you know? I mean, and this is why it's such an interesting topic, because you can look at this thing from so many different angles, and you can see so many different nuances in it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is what makes this fascinating to me. You know, I understand, you know, what Diane's saying, and I agree with almost all of it. Not completely, but I agree with a good deal of it. And I can see where she's coming up with her points. I just happen to see it a little bit differently. She agrees with some of what I'm saying, not all of it, but right. She sees where I'm getting my points. You know, this is going to be a fascinating thing to watch play out. What's going to drive me crazy is that we're going to have to wait till June to find out what the Supreme Court does.
Yeah, and I think that's not a timely manner either, waiting 2 months. I mean, this case has been in the news for months.
Right.
They should have been working on this already.
You know, it's been in the news for months. You're absolutely right. But that was the buildup. That was the hype going into it.
Right.
They just heard oral arguments a couple of days ago.
Yes, but come on, Craig.
You know.
They've been reading about it. They know all about this case.
You know, I'm just saying the wheels grind slowly at the Supreme Court level. They just do. And it drives me nuts because you would think they could look at a case and go, well, okay, we'll take a vote. You will hear the oral arguments. We'll take a vote tomorrow and we'll announce what we come up with.
That's really the way this case should be. Maybe not tomorrow, but within, let's say, a week's time, because you got to write the rigmarole. This is a cut and dry case.
It would take
he's
longer.
He's guilty or he's not guilty.
It would take a lot longer if when they write their opinion, they would have to do what you and I do, and that's come up with a title. It would take forever in that case.
That's true.
Folks, we've hit the bottom of the hour. That means we have to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about tax hikes and climate policy. You don't want to miss this. You're going to want to stay with us. There's more to come on Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi, guys. Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey getting you through a Friday night edition of the show, and if you miss any part of it, go to RSPRadio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button, and have a weekend of it.
A weekend of us. How boring.
Yes. Oh, come on now. Biden has come up with a new capital gains tax plan, Diane, and all the major economists are looking at this, and they all have the same opinion. What the hell?
Yes, it is a nightmare, basically. I mean, we are talking about the biggest capital gains tax since 1920s, when it first came around. That's how high he wants to do this. And it's supposedly to go into effect in 2025. And it's just ridiculous. You know, long-term capital gains, qualified dividends. I mean, he wants a 44.6%. this is just insanity. This affects businesses. It affects the workers. It affects stocks. It affects our economic growth because it affects investment, basically. Yeah. And folks, whether you know it or not, investment is the real driver of economic growth.
Well, this would absolutely kill investments because nobody's going to want to invest if they're facing a 45% tax on investments. And when people don't invest, businesses can't expand. You know, if you're talking about manufacturing, if you're talking about research and development, you know, the tech industry, you know, it trickles down to just about everything. When you do that, you're absolutely killing off investment. And the way this is structured, economists are saying this would actually tax inflation.
It would raise inflation greatly.
Well, not only would it raise inflation, it would actually tax inflation. Mm-hmm. If you look at the way this thing is structured, as prices on goods go up, the tax collected on goods goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And what economists are saying is that if this goes through, if this is what takes place, this will provide the government an incentive to keep inflation high because the higher inflation goes, the more tax money they can collect.
Right. If you want to look at in simplistic terms, basically taxing capital gains means less investment. It means less economic growth. And it also means the rise in people's standards of living is going to slow down dramatically.
We can't really afford that because the way inflation is right now, yes, people are getting pay raises, but they're not keeping up with the inflation rate.
Or the cost of living.
Right. So if you slow people's climb up the socioeconomic ladder, I mean, it's already going backwards now. You know, with inflation outpacing pay raises, people have less money in their pockets month by month by month.
Right. And if you want to understand how this affects inflation, you have to look at it this way. Inflation impacts the price of equity, such as stocks, and a lot of us are in the stock market. That means a tax on gains when equities are sold also actually taxes inflation.
Right. Now, a lot of people out there are thinking, well, you know, I'm not really in the stock market. I'm not a day trader. I don't, you know, follow things like that. But if you've got a 401k, you're in the stock market.
Right.
You know, I mean, so this is also going to have a negative effect on retirement savings.
Big time. Big time. This is just another one of his bad ideas. And, you know, that makes me think of something. It's related, but not exactly. You know, when these reporters go out and they interview people and they say, what do you think is the biggest problem facing America today? And some people will say inflation, some will say the economy, some will say the border, some will say crime, some will say, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But the one thing none of them say, the biggest problem today, and it's for reasons like this, the biggest problem in our country today is Joe Biden.
That's true. That is 100% true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything he does turns to crap.
Right. And it's behind the scenes. He's got Obama, you know, pulling the strings.
Yep. You know, here's another thing this capital gains tax, you know, hike is going to do. It's going to really slow down, I mean really slow down, consumer spending.
Oh, big time.
You know, and here's the easy way to look at all of this. And I know, you know, economics can be a very boring topic. You know, it's all numbers and you know, shifting things from point A to point B. But here's what you want to know. When investment slows down, when consumer spending slows down, the economy overall slows down.
Mm-hmm.
GDP slows down, okay? And the way to increase GDP, consumer spending, grow the economy, is to charge less taxes to encourage more investment. Because the more investment you have, every boat in the lake rises.
Yeah. Well, here's something else that people don't realize. This proposal of Biden's, it would create a mandatory capital gains tax on transferred assets for families when parents pass away. In other words, your parents pass away, but they've left you $1 million. Instead of it going like it should go to the families, you're going to be hit with that 44 point whatever percent tax. So what your parents worked for, you're only going to get half of it, and the government's going to get the other half.
I mean, you know, if they leave you $1 million, you're only going to get about $600,000.
Right.
In pocket change, you know.
And the government gets the rest of what your parents worked for to provide for their children when they're gone. It's going to the government, folks.
Now, Republicans have a phrase for that. It's called the death tax.
Exactly.
And that's what
it is. They're not calling it that. Biden's not calling that, you know, calling it that.
Well, of course not. Of course not. Now, you bring up a good point. You know, you say, okay, and for round numbers, you know, we pick $1 million. Your parents die, they leave you $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, under this plan, roughly 45% of that goes to the government. Okay, that's cold hard cash. Now, out here where I live, in ranch country, parents die, they leave their ranch to their children.
Right.
Okay. The ranch has a value. Okay. Mm-hmm. When property taxes are done, the ranch has a valuation. Okay. According to the death tax, while no cash changes hands from the deceased parent to the living child, that death tax then applies to the value of the land they leave you, and you've got to fork that over to the government.
Government, exactly. In other words, this type of capital gains tax is robbing from the poor to give to the rich.
It's exactly what happens. You know, now here in my state of Nebraska, we have a capital gains tax here, and our legislature's trying everything they can think of to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. They want it gone, you know, the death right. tax. They want it gone because it's negatively affecting farmers and ranchers in this rural state. Okay. Now, Nebraska gets rid of it. The federal government implements it. We're no better off. We're actually worse off if you get left property than you were with the Nebraska thing. If Nebraska doesn't get rid of it, you're getting screwed over twice.
Right. Well, here's something surprising. Another reason that we have the country's greatest governor is we do not have a separate inheritance, which is an inheritance tax,
right.
The death tax.
Right. You know, I mean, your family works their whole lives on a ranch. And a lot of these ranchers out here are fourth, fifth, sixth generation on the same property.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden you leave that to your kids or your grandkids, and you're going to get they're going to get screwed because you left them the property your family has worked for six generations?
Right.
That's not right. That you. No. I mean, that's hideous.
It is. In fact, the only states in the country that do not have this kind of estate tax are Alaska, Florida, Nevada, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, and Wyoming.
That's it. That's it. Now,
that's pretty bad, folks.
It is. You know, I mean, this is something to keep an eye on because this is an economy killer.
And the Republicans better wake up and stop this.
Better do something.
Yeah.
I mean, holy crap. Here's the other thing we got to talk about tonight. Biden has a new climate change regulation. And we just got done talking about an economy killer. This is a power grid killer.
Yes. He actually wants to do away with all coal plants.
And gas.
And, well.
Natural gas plants, too.
All of that, yes.
You know, I mean, you can't do this. And I did a commentary a few weeks ago about electric cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally wrote into that the fact that the power grid that we have now is not sufficient if we go all electric vehicles by 2030 or 2035, the way Biden and Obama want to do it. The power grid can't handle it as it is. And I say literally in that commentary, step one is to build more coal and gas and nuclear power plants because you can't charge all of these electric vehicles. You can't run all these households on electricity on the current power grid. And he's talking about killing off coal and killing off natural gas-fired power plants. Well, where the hell is the electricity going to come from?
I guess, you know, you're plugging to the electric grid. But this is absolutely asinine. All his green energy initiatives are absolutely idiotic. From the windmills to the electric cars to all his nonsense. We need to have the coal, the gas. We need it all. The problem with the electric cars and all that, it boils down to one thing. The batteries are not yet perfected enough.
Not even close.
Not even close. And the expense. Your electric car needs a new battery. You're not talking a couple of $100 for a new battery. You're talking thousands of dollars for a new battery. Plus another thing that people don't realize. Because electric cars are more prone to be driven in more stop-and-go type traffic,
right. The
tires wear down faster. They're not the same tires as on a regular car. They're going to get less mileage on them, but cost more than the tires on a regular type car. They're more expensive to upkeep. They're just, we were not ready for electric cars yet. The technology is not there. And another bad thing about them, these batteries run on lithium. Guess where our lithium comes from, folks?
Yeah, take a wild guess.
China.
Communist China.
China. This is what they're pushing on America. Trump had us energy independent. Now we're dependent on China?
Well, not only China, but you can also look at certain questionable countries in Africa. Because not only do we need lithium from China, we have to get cobalt out of Africa. And that stuff is strip mined by kids. Literally,
right.
By kids.
Right.
Okay. all of this crap, I don't care if it's wind turbines. And by the way, they are turbines. They're not windmills. Windmills pump water out of the ground, and you water your cattle with them.
Oh, I call them windmills because they go around. I know what they are.
You know, but if you're talking about, you know, turbines, you're talking about solar panels, you're talking about electric car batteries, you're talking about all this stuff, there is no green in any of that green energy. What do you do with the parts when the equipment wears out? You know, a wind turbine has a lifespan of about 15, maybe 20 years if you're lucky. Then what you got is a whole bunch of stuff that you got to bury in the ground, and it will not disintegrate in the ground.
No.
What do you do with these car batteries when they're toast? You got to bury them in the ground.
Yeah. This is, you know, stuff we were not ready for. Maybe in the future, electric cars will work out when we know how to do the batteries beyond Chinese lithium. But they're not perfected yet.
I'll tell you, when we get to an alternate form of energy for cars, and that's when we perfect the hydrogen engine.
Absolutely.
Where the exhaust is nothing but water.
Exactly. But that's not going to happen for a while because, you know, Biden wants to shut down nuclear plants. Folks, in case you didn't know, the only form of energy that leaves no carbon footprint is nuclear energy. People need to understand that.
You know, unless you're Fukushima, where things get all fucked up, you know, nuclear energy is really the cleanest and safest and most reliable source of energy there is.
I've written articles on that. And the thing in Japan was their fault where they positioned the nuclear plant.
Right, right. I mean, it was an anomaly.
Right. Chernobyl was a fluke. It was, you know,
that was human caused. Yeah.
France has had nuclear energy for decades. They've never had an accident. People hear the word nuclear and they panic.
Right.
That's the problem.
Now, I'll tell you what some people are looking at, and this fascinates me, is small nuclear energy facilities. You know, we always think of nuclear facilities looking like Fukushima or looking like, you know, Three Mile Island or, you know, whatever that was, or, you know, Chernobyl. Well, you can actually make very small nuclear power plants. Sure. Now, they're not going to produce the kind of energy the big ones do, but you can spread them out and you have very little nuclear waste and you can power large regions or large cities with these things, and you can put them just about anywhere. And I mean, think about this. We've got ships in the Navy that are nuclear powered. Okay.
Right.
They don't have Chernobyl sitting on top of them.
How about nuclear submarines? They have even less sitting on top of them.
You know, they've got very small, compact nuclear power plants. We could put those all over the place and literally never have a problem with them.
Exactly. But you hear the word nuclear, oh, no, you can't do that. People have to get out of this old mindset that they have. There's no, well, first of all, you got to get out of the mindset about climate change. That's number one. And that's going to be hard to do when half the country's indoctrinated into believing that nonsense. In case people don't know, our climate has been changing since the Earth was formed billions of years ago, will continue to change in cycles until the Earth is no more in billions of years from now. You got to get over the mindset that this is caused by people. It's not. What people cause is pollution. Pollution and climate change are two different entities. And the sooner people understand that, the better off we'll all be.
Doesn't
really
matter.
Instead of listening to loons like AOC.
Right.
You know, listen to the scientists. And by the way, the polar ice caps are not shrinking. They're actually expanding.
Doesn't matter how much money you throw at the thermostat, you cannot change the weather by taxing it.
That's right. I mean, only in Washington, right?
I mean, for God's sakes, I mean, use a little common sense, people.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's all Diane and I are asking is for a little common sense.
Right. Yeah. Cows are not destroying the world.
No.
It's people like Joe Biden and Obama and the liberals, AOC, and all the nutcases.
You know,
they are burning, so afraid of everything.
Coal burning power plants today are so much cleaner than they were 20 years ago.
Exactly.
And no fossil fuel burns cleaner than natural gas, and those are the two main things he now wants to shut down.
That makes him more beholden to China, his buddies.
Well, we're going to subsidize China. We're right. going to subsidize their economy while he's killing our own.
Right. People, you got to wake up to what's happening here. And that's why I brought up the thing about what is the real danger to America.
Yeah.
It's Joe Biden, otherwise known as O'Biden.
That's it. That's it in a nutshell. And when I say nutshell, heavy on the nut.
Heavy.
You know, I mean, that's just the way it is. Folks, I'll tell you what, we're just a couple of minutes early, but what do you say, Diane? Let's wrap it up.
Okay, and with that, I'll say nighty-night and see you guys on Tuesday.
Have yourselves a great weekend, folks. We'll catch up with you again on Tuesday. Bye-bye.